Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
And we're in the playbook for a Thursday on Patriots.com radio. Negative Nancy's. John Rook with you here. A couple of emails from earlier in case you missed PFW in progress. Perhaps you're still logged in and you're staying with us. But I certainly did make note of a couple of emails. Let's see. Where's the one that I wanted to look at in particular? Where is it? I lost it now. Oh, no, this is not a good way to start. Ah, here it is, Brian's email. If people really think PFW is too negative, they should take a few hours and listen to John Rook when Eric's on once in a while. He, Rook, spent most of yesterday talking about how Brady may no longer be the guy to take the Patriots where it wants to go. Patriots singular? Come on, Brian. Take the Patriots where they want to go. Because of the O-line, and that we might need to trade him for some first-rounders. Okay, I said, sure, you might want to consider that, because that might be the going rate. You're telling me that the Houston Texans and Bill O'Brien finally say, all right, we need a quarterback, because let's say they fail to get to the playoffs again. And they say, you know what, Brady's just the guy to get us there until, oh, my goodness, maybe somebody like, I don't know, the guy that was backing Brady up the last few years. Maybe we need somebody to bring him along because Fitzpatrick is not the guy. And we're going to offer him 2 first-rounders or we're going to offer him a player and a first. Are you telling me the Patriots wouldn't consider that? Are you nuts? Of course they would. If the Patriots are true, if Bill Belichick is true to everything he has said and every reason he gives for the moves that he makes, whether you like them or not, and the reason he always gives is what?
Oh, to do what's best for the team.
Well, only do what's in the best interest of the team. He says that every time. You're telling me that getting 2 ones or a package or something like that isn't in the best interest of the team when you know full well you're going to have next year a 38-year-old quarterback whose numbers have gone steadily down over the last, 4 years? Come on. Come on, Brian. He says PFW is rarely negative compared to the playbook, though some might argue it's more realism than negativity. Bingo. Bingo. Where's Troy Brown when you need him? Bingo. I got bingo. Of course it's realism. It's exactly what we deal with. Thank you, Troy. That's what we deal with here. We're not necessarily dealing in everything sunny side up here. And nor are we staying down in the ditch on negativity either. We're not going to wave the pom-poms here. I'm sorry. We do a little of that. We jump behind them when it's warranted, I suppose. And we've certainly made a history of doing that. Look, nobody wants the team more to succeed more really than I do. It's in our best interest. Everybody feels good. It makes for an easy show. It makes for a good time. Things are always rosier and cheerier around the stadium when the team is playing well. Come on. We're not negative. We're not. This show does not try to go negative, regardless of what you might think. All we do is look at the other side. We do a lot of devil's advocating here. Let's look at the other side. Let's look at the other side. Let's balance it out. Let's balance it out. We go one way because everybody goes the other. And all we're trying to do is present 2 sides, 2 points of view, so you can make up your mind. We're going to present both sides of the story, so you can make up your mind. You know the answer is always what? It's always somewhere in the middle. So we don't spend any time talking about negativity. Spent most of the years talking about Brady may longer be the guy to take the Patriots where they want to go. I've been talking about that for more than a year. More than a year, Brian. Where have you been? Got hammered for it last year, and I'm standing up to it now. Why? Because it's true. You just don't want to hear it. Realism, my man. You said it in your email. Some might argue it's more realism than negativity. It's exactly what it is. It's all realism. That's what we deal with. Realism. All right. Rant out of the way. Now, this is, of course, Prediction Thursday. So it's your chance to jump on the bandwagon and be a Pats fan, or it's your chance to perhaps have a dose of realism to go with your cough syrup and go against the Patriots, whichever. But we got prizes on the line, as you well know. If you play in Prediction Thursday, you know if we get a correct score, anybody with a correct score wins a copy of the Patriots yearbook for 2014, Patriots media guide for 2014. It'll be yours. We have not had a winner yet through 3 weeks. But the contest continues today. So get your cards and your letters coming, kids. 855-PATS-500, the toll-free number. Webradio at patriots.com is the email address. At JR Broadcaster on Twitter. John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, on Facebook. And if you haven't submitted a friend request on Facebook, you can do it. Then you can post on the Facebook page, and you can utilize the chat function during the show. And we can communicate that way. Our guests today are a couple of biggies. As you know, usually on Thursdays, Russell Baxter, pro football guru himself, joins us in the second hour of the show to run through the week in the NFL and hit the highlights. For week four, we got plenty of them. In 20 minutes, the one and only Mike Tirico from ESPN will join us as well. Mike and I do go back a number of years. When I first started doing Big East basketball back in the late 80s, Mike was a newbie out of Syracuse University, and he was a sports anchor at Channel 5, which I believe is WSTM in Syracuse, New York. And that's where we first met years ago. And we've stayed in contact over the years, and clearly his career has gone on to a different stratosphere. But that's great. He's very good at what he does. He really is. He's a nice guy. He's just as genuine as he appears to be on the air. And he's going to give us a few minutes of his busy schedule here today in the playbook to talk with you. If you have some questions for Mike, you can certainly tweet those my way as well, and we'll send them to him. And I prefer Twitter. Email is fine. If you don't have a Twitter account, I guess that's okay. I would prefer you have the Twitter account and follow me on Twitter. That would be great, because I'm woefully lacking in the tweets department behind, you know, my PFW brethren here. And so I'm shamelessly trying to plug it so I could get up to snuff with the experts here in social media. So, you know, do a brother a solid, will you? At JR Broadcaster. That's all I'm asking. If you got good stuff, I'll follow you back. It's that simple. But it's easier to go one direction, and especially since Twitter limits you to 140 characters, you can't go overboard. You got to get to the point. Sometimes an email you can ramble, which I do all the time, and you know it's hard to get to the point. So that's fine. I would prefer that, but that's okay. If you have to email it, you email it. Do want you though to email your game predictions. You can call those in, you can tweet them, and you can Facebook them. And we'll stick with that throughout the show. Now, in terms of the other contest, which we talked a little about yesterday, because yesterday's show was so completely jam-packed, it was hard to squeeze in a lot of different things. We're trying to come up with a name for Wednesday's program. Since we have Nitpick Tuesday, we have Prediction Thursday, what's Wednesday's show? Hashtag something Wednesday. We have hashtag Nick Pick Tuesday, and we now have hashtag Prediction Thursday. Got to come up with something for Wednesday. And we got probably, what, Kevin, 30, 35 suggestions, somewhere in that realm, I think, yesterday. And I appreciate every single one of them. Couple of them have real possibilities. But I got to admit, nothing knocked me for a loop. And I'm looking for somebody to knock me for a loop with it. And I'm looking for, when you send it,
And then Kevin and I look at it and we go, that's the one. I got two that I sort of favor that maybe I'm going to go with. I'm not going to tell you what they are because I still want your creativity to come about. So that contest, name Wednesday's show, Game Show Wednesday, right? Name Wednesday's show is still open, still keeping it open. So, again, tweet your best Wednesday show ideas to at JR Broadcaster. And, again, if you don't have a Twitter account, then you can certainly email them in. The only thing is, emailing them in, I can't guarantee that I'm personally going to see them because we share the email inbox with PFW and Bob Soucy and the Fantasy Football Champs and Kevin. And so sometimes things get biffed on email that wouldn't get biffed if they get sent directly to my Twitter account. You follow? So there you go. That's what it is for what it's worth. But there were a couple of really good ones, and I appreciate all of the suggestions. And keep the cards and letters coming on naming Wednesday's show, because I am going to give away a media guide for the best Wednesday show, and we are going to name Wednesday's program hashtag something Wednesday, just like we have Nitpick Tuesday and Prediction Thursday. I like giving a day a theme. So if you can kind of follow where I'm going with this, I'd like to have a name for the show on Wednesday that's versatile enough to go any different direction we need to go. Whether it's back to the previous game for reference, or whether it's previewing the next team that the Patriots are playing, which we obviously do a lot of on Wednesday. And if you listen to yesterday's show, you know we did a ton of that. Talked a lot about the Chiefs yesterday, which we're going to get into here in just a couple of moments. But we also want versatility. So if we're going to do a little game show, or maybe we're going to do a little, you know, a theme question of the day, which we like to do a lot of on Wednesdays as well. Maybe we have a lot of guests. You know, we got a lot of, we try to bring a lot of different things. We try to have some fun on Wednesdays. And I would also tell you, I am a huge fan of alliteration. Right, Kev? We like alliteration. We like things that, you know, like Wookiee Wednesday. We like that. That was Big Matt's. That was his suggestion. Thank you. We like Wookiee Wednesday. I don't think that's going to win, but we did like that one. That was sort of the leader in the clubhouse for a while, wasn't it? Oh, well. Just because it's kind of goofy. And that's who we are. We're kind of goofy, too. But you get the idea. That we're looking for something that's sort of all-encompassing, has versatility to it. So, seriously, put your thing in caps on. You really want that media guide yearbook? We'll send you the copy, and we'll give you due credit for it. We'll make sure that we blast out your Twitter handle if you want us to do that, so you can get some followers. We'll do all that. We'll do whatever you like. We'll give you due note, duly noted. If you're the ultimate winner for naming Wednesday's show. All right, lots of things to go here on the program today, and good things going on so far. I kind of look at the breakdown between the Patriots and the Chiefs going this way. I think Paul hit on something very important in the last couple of minutes of PFW today, where I believe the Patriots do match up similarly like Oakland. In other words, I'm not sure that Kansas City is all that different from Oakland. I'm not convinced that Kansas City has supremely better, if better at any stretch, personnel from top to bottom than the Patriots have. But to me, and that's kind of similar to what we thought with Oakland. We didn't think Oakland had better personnel, but Oakland darn near won the game Sunday because the Patriots just did not execute. And it really boils down to not executing in the red zone. And we talked some about this yesterday. They just didn't execute in the red zone. If they'd executed in the red zone like they probably should have, that's probably like a 28-9 game on Sunday. And we're not having probably half of the conversations that we've had this week. We're still recognizing there's work to do, but at least the red zone offense, you know, and they get the ball down inside the 10 and the 20-yard line, at least the red zone offense is cashing in. They didn't cash in, therefore they struggled, and it really makes the overall picture look worse than it really is. How's that for negativity, Brian? I think the Kansas City game is going to kind of bear similarly. The X factor here, though, is playing at Arrowhead. And we've talked about this before. We mentioned it yesterday as well. And the bottom line is, this is one of the toughest venues, probably along with, you know, Seattle. It's one of the toughest venues to play in the entire NFL. This is a pit. This is a noisy building. The foundation of the stadium shakes. Shakes. If you've ever been to Arrowhead. I appreciate that. I think it's great. I think Kansas City fans are outstanding because largely they've been rooting for a team that has been mired in mediocrity, and that's in a good season, and that's in a good year. This is a once proud old AFL franchise that had some initial success after the merger, and then they just really haven't done much since. It seems like Kansas City has more of a legacy of championship football than they really have. Do we have to go back to the days of Len Dawson to find it? I don't know. I think you kind of do. I just seems like they're better than they are. But I think for this particular purpose, that's why this fandom is so good, because they support some really cruddy teams and have done so for a long, long time. I don't know that we as Patriots fans do the same if this team fell on hard times. I really don't. I'm not convinced that that happens. The Chiefs right now are, you know, both teams are a little bit of a statistical wash on total offense. The Chiefs are underperforming, as we know the Patriots are. The Chiefs are 23rd in the NFL in total offense. The Patriots are 26th. Yards per play, the Chiefs are slightly better. The Patriots are dead last in the NFL in yards per play. They average just over 4 yards per snap of the football. That's 32nd and last in the NFL for the Patriots. You think we need any work on the offense here? Of course we do. Chiefs really, though, aren't much better. They're 27th. Points per game. Well, the Chiefs are 22nd. The Patriots are 14th. So yards per play and points, that's a big differential for the Patriots. And that's because the defense has played as well as they have, and because the Patriots are tied for the lead in turnover margin. They're fifth, in takeaways, excuse me. They're tied for first in takeaways. Tied for first in takeaways. So because they're tied for first in takeaways, there's a big reason why they're scoring more points. They're getting the ball in better field position. So they haven't needed to grind out as much yardage in order to take advantage of it and make the other team pay. Plus, they absolutely have a perfect field goal kicker. 8 for 8. Steven Gostkowski's 8 for 8 this season, tied for first in the league, batting 1,000. That's a big factor right now as well. All right, other statistical comparisons between the two sides. Patriots are 22nd in rushing yards per game. The Chiefs are 13th. And it does look like Jamal Charles is going to be available. And while Nile Davis had a big game, he did fumble the ball a couple of times last week in their win over Miami. I fully expect to see Jamal Charles running the football. And he's got what I call missability. He's got the ability to make a defender miss him. Patriots, I think, it best have somebody spying on 2-5 in the offensive backfield for Kansas City this week. Passing yards per game, both teams are almost dead even. Chiefs are 26th, Patriots are 27th. Sacks allowed, whew. Believe it or not, and I actually did not know this one until I had to go back and look it up. Alex Smith has been sacked more than Tom Brady. He's been sacked 11 times. That's 30th in the NFL. Brady's been sacked 7 times. That's 19th. Both teams have lost the same amount of fumbles. Third down conversion. This is where I think could be a huge difference. All right, so, you know, right now, everything I've given you, both teams are relatively even, wouldn't you say, offensively, with the exception of points scored per game. And the one factor there certainly is the takeaway by the Patriot, the takeaway factor. But in third down conversion, the Chiefs are converting on almost 48% of their third downs, while the Patriots are converting 10 percentage points less at 38%. That's just 21st in the NFL. Red zone, touchdown percentage. The Chiefs, 67%, fifth in the NFL. Patriots, 50% after going 1-for-4 this past week. That's 17th. Okay, big difference. Third down percentage, red zone percentage. That's where I see the Chiefs have a huge advantage. Couple that with, you know, the crowd and everything else that's going on. I don't like the way that I'm leaning, kids. I don't like the way that I'm leaning. Let's go to the phones. Good afternoon, Justin in Virginia. You're in the playbook.
What's going on, John? I just want to tell you that don't ever let nobody change the way you talk about the Patriots. I hear some people saying you're negative and stuff. I really want you to just keep it honest like you always have, man.
I appreciate that, Justin. Thank you.
Yeah. And the thing that I think will most likely happen with this Chiefs-Patriots game, I think if we lose it, it's because we just played downright worse than the Chiefs. But I do think the Chiefs are going to play down. That's what they did last year. Once they got a win, they played down. They didn't play themselves after they got a win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're going to do against us. And I think if we lose this, we must have played really terribly, because I definitely think they will play down.
Yeah, you know, I'm hoping that because of the atmosphere and because Kansas City can be, or at least we've seen in the past, they can be explosive offensively. I'm hoping that they'll figure out a way to play up here, because it is a road game. You have the national spotlight on you with Monday Night Football, you know, and I hope that these guys remember what it's like. This is my biggest hope for the Patriots. I hope these guys remember what it's like to play with a chip on their shoulder. Remember years ago, in the last, you know, within the last 10 years, how many times when, you know, they've taken negativity in the media and they've turned it around and that chip has turned into a boulder on the shoulder, and they've usually responded real well. I hope that these guys can learn how to do that.
One thing I think that is going to be their downfall for this game, maybe, and for the season, that offensive line, man, is playing terribly, and I can't see nothing that is likely going to happen that is going to flip us back to last year, what we were last year as an offensive line, which I admit wasn't that good, but I thought we could at least win with that. I thought we could at least go to the Super Bowl with that. This right here, we can't go to the Super Bowl with this.
No, we can't. I've got some thoughts on the offensive line. I'm still kind of going through. I've taken a look at a lot of videotape, and some of the things that, you know, basically if anybody takes the time, you can probably do the same thing through what's available on the internet as well. And I'm going to write a couple of things down about, you know, the offensive line and what we should reasonably expect, next week in the View from Above piece. That'll be next Tuesday here on Patriots.com. Only because we're talking about it a lot, and it seems like this is a subject that isn't going to go away anytime soon. And any time that we look at the Patriots, you know, coming up short or not doing what we think they should do on offense, it's all going to come back down to the offensive line play. That truly is the start. Things have to start with the O-line. Everything else revolves around that, I think, offensively. I'm not sure that there's anybody on that offense, and that includes Brady, who can put the team on his shoulders and say, all right, boys, come on, let's go, without the offensive line clearing the way.
I think Gronk can. But Gronk has to return to Gronk, and I'm not sure when he's going to do that. And I question with a little bit of doubt when, like, if he does. Even if it's, like, not even this year, if he does this season.
Mm-hmm.
Those ACL tears are something, man.
They are. They absolutely are. And that's why I'm a little kind of perplexed at people already jumping on Darrelle Revis. Oh, he's not the Revis we thought going to get. Well, no, he's not. What did you think you're going to get? Have you ever turned an ankle? Have you ever torn your knee up? Have you ever tried to come back from that? Have you ever been a football player? Have you ever been an athlete? I mean, I would ask these questions because I think these are people just spouting off and not really knowing what they're talking about. Consider what it really means to come back. And this is taking Gronk some time. It's taking Revis some time. And these guys in the offensive line, and I'm going to kind of boil it down quickly for you here, but this is kind of the gist of where I'll go with it this week. We should have expected that it was going to take the offensive line time. And we all were guilty, all of us. That includes the PFW guys, media that cover this team here in Boston and New England, myself, everybody. And I would assume as well, this also includes the coaching staff down the hallway here inside Gillette Stadium as well, and the players themselves. We all assumed that things would be better because they just were in the past. You can't assume that. You really have to do a job of trying to step aside from that and look at it, and it's somewhat analytically, and looking at where your strengths and your weaknesses are. And if you have questions, you need to vocalize them. And there have been very few people that have done that. Very few.
One last question I'm going to hit you with. What do you think is going to save this offensive line to be good enough? What do you think it's going to be? I know people throw Brian Stork out there, but he's not enough for me.
He's
going to make it happen?
He's a start, Justin. He'd be a start because when they drafted him with the express intent that he was going to eventually move in and play on the offensive line. That's my thought, number one. He's not going to be the entire answer because he needs some time. But the thought process here is that he would at least begin to allow this team to solidify itself on the line. You move a guy like Dan Connolly back to potentially a more natural position at guard. If you get Ryan Wendell healthy, then he can become a swing guy on either side. If Marcus Cannon continues to, have troubles, which he has had over the last couple of weeks, maybe Wendell fits in there. Maybe you figure out a guy. I'm not sure why Josh Klein has fallen into disfavor. Maybe it has something to do with injury that we're not entirely certain about at this stage. But at least you can start trying to let these guys work off of each other and then give them some chance to form a bond. And that's what offensive lines need. They need that to step forward. And they've got to start somewhere. Stork moving in at center would at least be a start to that end. Let's take some time now to visit with an old friend. I don't want to say how old, but let's just say it's been a number of years since he was at Channel 5 in Syracuse, and I was the rookie voice of the Friars back in the late 1980s. He is ESPN and Monday Night Football's own Mike Tirico. Mike, welcome into the playbook.
We are both old. Hey, John, good to talk to you. How you doing, bud?
I'm all right. Good to talk to you, too. This is, as I'm sure you are aware, a point of contention with a lot of Patriots fans with New England all over the place as you prepare for this game on Monday night. You're going to get to step right into it. So I'd be at least initially interested in your impressions on where the Patriots are struggling and maybe why you think they're struggling putting things together on offense.
Well, I think it's got to start. I will say it's got to start up front. When you think about the people that are up front and their inability to have that cohesive group that's tight together and protecting Tom, I think that dovetails with the completion percentage coming down, and that, to me, is highlighted by the wide receiving core. I think we're back at very similar places we visited earlier last year, where this Patriots offense just is not what it was 4, 5, or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Nobody's replaced the capabilities of Aaron Hernandez from a tight end standpoint. Maybe the hope is that Wright can come in as he learns the system and the season goes on and develops timing with Tom, which we know is so essential. He can give them, and Gronk staying healthy, a good 2 tight end look that gives the team some more flexibility and different groups of personnel out there. So all those things, I think, really do work together. So it's hard to say there's one thing, but I know just in watching this week as I've started preparing here, the different offensive line combinations. You look up and here you are in the middle of the game. Nobody went off injured necessarily, but Stork's in there at center. And the center position is rotating with guys through. Mm-hmm. That's not what happens on stable offensive lines. So it's a bit of a concern, I think, at this point for this team.
Very true. Something that we noted even a couple of weeks ago as the Patriots were getting ready for Minnesota in the opener against Miami, there were all kinds of rotations, and it was absolutely disastrous in getting their clocks cleaned in the second half in South Florida. They seem to stay with one lineup, certainly had some better results against Minnesota, and then somewhat to our bewilderment, they came out after establishing some sort of a sense of physicality against Minnesota and came out with 3 straight passes, 3 straight incompletions against Oakland, and that set the tone for the entire game, and it let the Raiders know, hey, we can play here. And it totally mind-boggles those that have followed this team for a number of times. It's almost anti-Patriot. It's almost gone away against the way this team has operated, at least in the recent past, in the successful recent past. And so it's a combination, I think, of a couple of things. Number one, you're right. Got to have some sense of continuity in the line. It all starts there. But two, play calling. I'm not so sure that the coaches have a real good grasp of what their talent can do. I think there's a disconnect there.
Well, it's maybe not what their talent can do. It's finding something that their talent can do. Because it seems like, as you look, they're trying to find what's going to work best with this group. And what can you maximize out of this? Mm-hmm. And I do think that starts with the offensive line. I think that's why you have a little bit, in addition to the obvious trading of Logan Mankins, a search for what's going to be this group's best five going forward. The one thing that this Patriots team has always been able to do is absorb injuries. And one reason, I think, is because there's the willingness to play people. If you are on the roster, it seems to me that you find a place to play or a way to get used as the season goes on. And there's a little bit of that discovery phase right now in competition where we're so used to seeing it in the preseason. I think we're seeing a little bit of that and finding the right mix up front. I'll have a better sense of that once we talk to the coaches.
That's sure.
Just in watching from afar. And I think it's okay because when you push back and look at the schedule, they played three teams that you would probably consider to be in the lower quarter of NFL teams, maybe the lower third. I may be underselling Miami with their poor early start.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we're looking at the best of the schedule. So this might be more of a discovery phase here, and I think the road starts getting a bit tougher with Kansas City on the road, then a short week of the turnaround to play Cincinnati on Sunday night, which is looking like a team in the first part of the season could threaten Denver and New England at the top for those supreme spots in the AFC. So the experimental time is going to have to taper down here, and the reality is setting in, especially with the two games the Pats have coming up the next 2 weeks.
It's a great way to look at it, Mike, actually. You could also put that on the flip side and say, you know, there's some real problems here. If you're struggling mm-hmm. against teams that don't have high-powered offenses,
yes.
like they've done through the first 3 weeks, and they're going to start getting more of a dose of that this next week because Kansas City at least is capable, even though statistically they're kind of where New England is offensively, and then you really get a dose of it against a team that undoubtedly will have a chip on its shoulder in Cincinnati next week.
No doubt there, John. And I think also when you're talking specifically the struggles on the offensive front, Kansas City has 4 years brought the pass rush, and even in their poor teams, they've been able to get to the quarterback, and Tom Bahali is excellent. Justin Houston, who they drafted in 2011, very good pass rusher, and they spent a first-rounder this year at 23 overall on Dee Ford, who I saw with Auburn play very well in the
yeah.
stage of the BCS championship game. So there are three guys from the edge who can provide pass rush. And we know that Arrowhead is right there with Seattle as the loudest environment in the league, which usually makes it a bit tougher for the offensive linemen, especially on the edges. So, having said all that, this is a day when you absolutely have to have your pass rush or your offensive line ready for the pass rush and able to absorb it. So I think that's something I'll be watching for sure as we get going on Monday night.
Absolutely. And, Mike, that kind of leads me into the next thing I wanted to ask you. Again, as we're visiting here with ESPN and ABC's Mike Tirico, who will be on the call with John Gruden Monday night for the Patriots and Chiefs at Arrowhead. You know, the game plan probably has to adjust for Brady to make him, A, more effective, and, B, give the offensive line, as we've been talking about, a chance to gel. You know, it's going to be a tough environment for that offensive line on Monday night, without a doubt. What are your thoughts on Brady and whether or not his skills are diminishing, whether he's the same Tom Brady as you've been able to see, or is his performance directly correlated to the performance of others around him?
Well, I know about 25, 26 other teams that would like to take those diminished skills if they're diminished.
I agree with that.
Quarterback.
I agree with that.
He's still tremendous. He is. Now, has he had the great games that we've seen in the past? No. Who's he throwing to? Really, when you look at it, we know last year was such a struggle with the new guys. And the question now is anybody better there in their spots? Now, Danny Amendola still hasn't done what I think many thought he might. Brandon LaFell is a good receiver to bring in, but he was available for a reason. He did not dominate down in Carolina by any stretch of the imagination. Edelman has really done what Welker did with 100 catches and already seems like he's on his way there with, what, I guess 22
mm-hmm.
already here in the first 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep pointing back to Kembrell Tompkins, Aaron Dobson. Will one of those guys, as we go through this season, continue to take that next step? One thing Coach Gruden has taught me over our 6 years together now is year two is a big one because now you've figured out it's like high school when you figure out where your locker is. You know how to get around the building. When you come back as a sophomore, you don't have those excuses. It's year two. You know what it takes to play in the league, to survive in the league, to win in the league, and to play week after week after week. Can those players specifically make the jump-up step as we go through this season? I think that'll go a long way to Tom Brady's completion percentage going back up, the ability to hit deep balls down the field, the ability of this team to put up 30 points in a game. He can still do it. I just think back to the second half of the Denver game last year. He was downright perfect in that second half. So the guy still has what it takes. I just think the cast around him needs to be at a higher level.
I never could find my locker, man.
You couldn't?
No.
All these years, John?
Never could find it.
Did you get the master lock combination down, right, left, right?
Yeah.
Some people struggled with that.
I totally understood the whole premise behind doing the lock and the combination, but gotcha. I just couldn't find the damn locker.
It was a problem, John. Real problem. Tough to carry those books all the time.
I did.
Strong back muscles.
I did. I actually did. I was one of the first people I knew in way back when to actually carry a backpack because I couldn't find my locker.
It's good to have confession here. We can put you on the couch and, you know, we can charge you $50 an hour and you can keep going.
Absolutely.
Figure out how you've ended up this way.
Absolutely. All right. Flipping it over to the other side now, Mike. Sure. The Patriots defensively, we've seen some improvements. Again, as per the argument just a short while ago, it may very well be that they haven't faced the most dynamic of offenses. But at the same time, a couple of key things. Number one, we're continuing to see the reemergence of Darrelle Revis in the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
But not because just of his physical play, because of his presence helping other guys in terms of their coverage. And I think there's a direct correlation between Revis being back there and we're seeing more versatility perhaps from a guy like Dante Hightower in the linebacking core. What are your thoughts?
Maybe that, but certainly keeping the secondary dialed into what's going on. You know, you are around the league for a while now, and this is my ninth year doing the game,
yeah.
And then including the studio stuff, it's been almost 20 years covering the NFL, and there are certain minds that you love to just pick and get into and just understand what they see in football, because they seem to see it differently. And I'd love to sit down and listen to Bill Belichick and Darrelle Revis talk defensive football, because Revis played it at an extremely high level, but also became a great student of it during his Jets time, and Rex always shared that with us when we visited with them. And we know how good he's been physically over the years. So to put those two together, I think it's just tremendous. I thought that was right up there with the key moves of this offseason. 1 year removed from the ACL, his mental approach to the game, just a perfect fit with Bill Belichick, Matt Patricia, and those guys. So I love that addition. I think it's had a great impact on the entirety of the secondary. Even though the competition has not been as good as we pointed out, I think this defense is for real. To me, there are more players and playmakers out there. Mayo back, Hightower. Can Jamie Collins give you what he gave you in that playoff game? Chandler Jones, even though I'm biased because of his alma mater, Syracuse, I think Chandler Jones is really on the verge of continuing this breakout that he had from last season to be just a terrific every-down player in this league. And Vince Wilfork back. I just like the group. Rob Ninkovich, every game I watch, he gets in there and makes a play.
Somehow, he does.
Some way.
He does.
So I like the group. I really like this group. I feel like it's more versatile. It's more multiple. And injuries really derailed this group last year. I'm excited about the Patriots defense, and I think we may see a little bit of a float back to the early Brady days when this was a terrific defensive team that the offense scored 20 to 25 as opposed to the offense scoring 40, 45 points and carrying it. I think the strength of this Patriots team might very well, as we go through the year, be on the defensive side of the ball.
See, that's a great point, and I had an emailer earlier today make that, and somebody also tweeted me a short while ago. Could it just very well be that this year's team is defensive-oriented like early in Brady's career? And frankly, I thought they kind of hit the nail on the head. You're doing the same thing. It may very well be this team needs to do that for a couple of more weeks, and I guess the only problem I have with that is, looking at it from a purely New England perspective, is that they got two pretty good opponents in New England and Cincinnati the next two. I mean, in Kansas City and Cincinnati the next 2 weeks.
No doubt, Cincinnati will present challenges. You know, I'd pay to watch A.J. Green and Darrelle Revis go head-to-head. That'll be fun here in a couple of weeks. Kansas City doesn't have a dominant stretch-the-field guy. Dwayne Bowe has name, has size, but really when you look at it, he doesn't have the career pedigree to show that he's among the top receivers in the league. So you start running through who are their best wide receiver options. They're in a similar spot. I think the one thing with Kansas City, as we spin towards this week, that would worry me, they found something in Nile Davis and his ability this week. I thought Nile Davis, the second-year back out of Arkansas, had a really good game, over 130 yards against Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if Jamaal Charles comes back, I think Jamaal Charles is an elite running back. If Charles and Davis become a 1-2 punch and they get the speed of Joe McKnight mixed in there, the speed of DeAnthony Thomas, the rookie from Oregon who hasn't played, they will stretch you horizontally and then can hit the vertical play. So I think this team can be a real legitimate challenge if they get their healthy pieces back, and that's Charles and Thomas, DeAnthony Thomas, coming into this week.
It's what scares me the most, looking at it from, again, just strictly New England side of things. If Charles is relatively healthy, the Patriots are going to have a supreme challenge on their hands on Monday.
And they used Joe McKnight, who the Patriots fans remember from his Jets days.
Yeah.
Promise never really paid off with productivity.
Right.
They used McKnight very well as a receiver last week, 6 catches for 64 yards. So you start putting McKnight, Nile Davis, Jamaal Charles, DeAnthony Thomas on the field. I don't think Kansas City might be there this week, but I think they'll be there down the line. You can get a lot of mismatches. Alex Smith didn't throw the ball downfield at all last week.
I think 8 yards was his top throw.
Exactly. So that's going to be the challenge this week for Kansas City. Because if we saw they didn't throw it down the field, and some guy who's crunching the numbers on the yards the ball travels in the air, we know Bill Belichick and company have seen that. So
yep.
We know that they are going to challenge them at the line of scrimmage and be physical with them because there's no room to get open down the field right now. So let's see if they can win those one-on-one battles against a team that knows what's coming and is, I think, far better defensively to stop them than that Miami team they played last week.
Might even we see a little 8 in the box, you know, from New England.
You could, just to limit the run.
Mm-hmm.
Give them a chance. You guys proved to me you want to throw it over our heads. Knowing that you're comfortable with the people in the back end to play. I think one of the neat stories over the last few years for me has been Devin McCourty, to watch a guy come in and have a good rookie season as a corner and then make this transition to safety and to watch what he's been able to do in second-team All-Pro safety last year. To watch a player in that group of draft picks that really didn't pan out in the secondary become one that stabilized and stabilized the back end playing that safety spot, I think, has been a fun thing for me to see watching the Pats over the last few years.
That's a very good point, and I think a lot of people feel likewise about Devin. His development and his sort of refinding himself, especially at safety, has been a story that probably can't be sold enough around here.
And, John, that's why I think Belichick is as good a coach in any sport that I've been around. He and Greg Popovich find what you do best, take that skill, make it pervasive as the feeling in the building of how we need to go about our work, and then use it against the opponent. So Nate Ebner may see 14 snaps with a specific purpose, and they work. And I don't think enough teams around the league do that. When every time I do a Patriots game, they are a pain to prepare for because just when you think you've seen what they do, they do something else. I'm actually thrilled to get the Patriots early this year as opposed to late because it becomes one of the hardest prep weeks for us because of the different places their folks show up.
See, now that's great perspective right there because you're absolutely right. Now you can know what it's like for us week to week and trying to get ready for these guys because, frankly, we don't know. We think we know, and we don't. And that really is sort of the beauty and the madness behind it all.
Because let's say you do something in the first quarter that the team's not ready for.
Yeah.
Well, you don't get that drive back. If you score on that drive, you stop somebody on that drive, your creation of deception works, or your usage of personnel, your wrinkle for the week gets the other guy, then you're plus one as you go through. Those drives are limited. Those drives are gold. They're only about 5 or 6.5. And if you can steal one or two of them where you win, whether you stop the other team, you change the field position, or you score, it goes a long way. The guy has not won 201 games just because he's had Tom Brady as his quarterback. It's been some exceptional decision-making, exceptional personnel finding and putting in the right place. And usage. And that's why I look at this roster and say that it's really a roster I feel good about for the Patriots if they can stay healthy, especially on that defensive side.
Mike, great stuff. Thanks for taking some time this afternoon in the middle of your preparation, and we'll definitely be looking forward to listening to you guys on Monday.
No problem. Got the third quarter of the Chiefs and the Dolphins on pause here on the big screen in the office, so
Atta
right back to that, man.
Atta baby.
It's all football. It's a good time.
You got to love that part of the job, right?
I do. I love when basketball season comes, but these 2 months, you can just dive into just the nitty-gritty. Nothing like it, John. Really enjoy it.
Dive in, my friend. Thanks so much for the time.
Great to visit, man. Look forward to talking to you soon.
You too. Thanks.
Bye,
all right. Mike Tirico, ESPN, NFL, Monday Night Football with John Gruden. He'll have the call with John for the game on Monday night at Arrowhead for the Patriots in Kansas City. All right, hopefully that gives you a little bit of insight, looking at it from his perspective, and take what he had to say and then perhaps turn that around and use that for your own benefit as you're watching the game unfold on Monday night. Let's get back to the phones and find out what you have to say. Eldridge in North Carolina. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, John, how you doing, buddy?
Good, buddy.
Okay. Offensive line, yeah. But what you said earlier, you know, somewhere down the line, that's going to happen, knowing Belichick. He did it to Malloy.
Yeah.
He did it to Seymour. He did it to Ty Law. And I'm one of them Patriots fans, but, man, to me, that's a heredity. I wouldn't want that with a Durham because I'm a Brady fan.
Mm-hmm.
But just like he said, man, like the guy said right there, Brady ain't never had the toy except for that 1 year, 2007. Well, Givens and Wynton Patton and the other receiver that's a Hall of Famer right now, they the one that's, you know, for those Super Bowl years, I said again, they were the best receivers until Miles Welker and Starwell come. After that, they got away from that.
Okay.
Just got away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And Brady, like I said, he always driving a Tucker toy. Why everybody else get Mercedes and Jaguars? You know, okay. so it's all falls on Bill. You know, Bill, talent picking, talent whatever, it blows to me, man. I don't want to use the other word, but it's on radio. it's just, I don't get it. You know, changes wise, it's coaching, okay. But after a while, you got to realize some of the players that you picking ain't as tight as what you think. You know, the height, like you said the other day, the height don't fit the player.
Yeah,
sometimes. Yes,
no, I was just going to say, Eldridge, I know where you're going, and, you know, I understand some of the consternation, let's put it that way, over, you know, the evaluation process of players. That's also why I'm glad, though, that we have a perspective like Mike Tirico's, because he can tell you largely what mainstream national media is thinking here. And the thinking here is that, you know, Bill Belichick is still, you know, everybody makes mistakes in this business. And everybody's going to have guys that hit, and everybody, including the very best, are going to have guys they miss on. You can certainly argue and go back and forth as to whether or not he's missed on more than his fair share or not recently. Bottom line is, he's still perceived to be the best or at the top of the game in the NFL. And it's a guy that maybe, I don't know, 30 other teams in the NFL would like to have if they had a chance to get him.
Yeah, they probably would. Coaching-wise. GM-wise, no.
Well, there you go.
But that's
the perception. The perception is, though, all right, so he's also the GM, but look at the big picture. And look at where they've been, and look at the fact that they've been in contention and they've been relevant now for 14 years. Relevant.
I look at that too, man. I bring that up all the time. Well, when anybody points things at me and my Patriots, we knew to bring to me.
I understand. The frustration is that there's a difference between being relevant and being a champion.
And winning.
Yes.
Yes,
I get that.
That's the big point. Now, what he said about Dobson, excuse me, and Thompson, you know, they the receiver waiting on in on the field yet. And I got to say, when they put Brian Teals in there, if they ever give the man a chance, if Bill don't cut him for another Rucker player or defensive lineman or somebody else, if he's still on the team and they like they said he did, that's going to be the difference maker. It ain't going to be done.
Eldridge, I think you're stretching. You know, he had a great preseason, But I think we all know that the preseason is just that. It's the preseason. And he's going up against other rookies and other, second and third teamers. If he gets a spot when he comes back after this week, if he gets a spot, it'll probably be on the practice squad. And if it's not, and then I don't see him working into the rotation anytime soon. I just don't. They have enough receivers. In fact, they've got one more than they really should have. And that's why you see a receiver deactivated every week because of the numbers game there. He's in a tough spot. I don't see that that's going to change a heck of a lot.
Well, but if everybody keep bringing on, right, banking on LaSalle, like I said, I'm in Carolina. There's a reason why they got rid of him. And it wasn't because they liked him and they wanted to keep, or his salary cap was too high. There's a reason why they got rid of him.
Well, maybe they'll figure that out, Eldridge. Maybe they will. And it would be a shame if it cost them something on down the line. But the fact remains is that, they've got money and time invested in the guy, and he's going to get the nod over an undrafted rookie who they can afford to take their time with on the practice squad. That's the way it's going to be. Are you going to, you have a prediction for this week?
Yes, sir.
Go.
I'm going to be a homer, even though I'm thinking otherwise. But I'm going to say 21-18 us.
21-18 Patriots. You're a good man, Eldridge. You're a good man. Thanks for the call. Todd in Toronto, up next in the playbook. Hey, Todd.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
I think I might have emailed you, but then that was when my wife was still here. And now that she's gone to work, I can actually talk.
Okay. Go for it.
So I got a name. Wits and Wagers Wednesday. And if you add Patriots community on that, you get www.patriots.com.
Okay. Oh, I see. Wits and Wagers. Okay. Wits and Wagers Wednesday. All right. Okay.
And I got a prediction.
Go.
And I don't like it, but this is what I'm feeling is going to happen. It's going to be 30-23. Brady's going to be driving down to try to get the tie and score, maybe go for 2 points. And we're going to get either a fumble for six or a pick six. It's going to end up 37-23 for KC.
37-23. Yikes. So you think the Patriots will be driving to tie the game and maybe the first Brady pick of the season, huh?
Well, what I think is going to happen is they're going to start showing up in the second half of the game because they have to.
Yeah.
And they're just going to start bringing it together. I think our defense is good, but I think that our offense is not good enough, and I think our offense is going to give them almost 10, maybe 14 points.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to admit I'm kind of leaning in that direction. I hope not. I'm really hoping not, but I certainly can understand why you'd make that assessment.
I just there's something about the team. The team doesn't have an identity yet. It doesn't have a focus. And I like what the other guy said that you just had on about the teams where Brady was just the clock manager, the game manager, and the defense won the game. That's what they need to get back to.
Yeah.
And if they can figure that out, they're good. But if Brady keeps trying to force the issue and put the ball in places, and I'm sorry, if you keep throwing it to Edelman, they're going to figure it out. They're going to be spying on it, and you're going to give up, especially against a good D like KC's.
Yeah.
Even with the injuries, they're going to figure it out. They got a good coach.
Right. Absolutely, they do. Andy Reid is a good coach.
Yeah, that's right. My fear. But anyway, that's my prediction and my name, and you have a good day, John.
Todd, thank you so much. He says 37-23 Chiefs in this one on Sunday. Andy in Vermont. Andy, you're up next in the playbook.
Hey, John.
Hey, Andy.
You know exactly what I'm going to say.
Okay. Say it anyway.
Marcus Cannon is not the answer at left guard.
Yep. I'd have to admit the last couple of weeks have been, or certainly last week was a rough week. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Offensively, Logan Gunn, that just disrupted the whole chemistry of the front line, even the, trying to work the second stringers in there, the rookies. I think the Pats need to go back to a legitimate six-man offensive line when they inserted Fleming in there, and maybe on defense go to a five-man front and establish the beginning of the game, establish a legitimate way to set the tone and then work from there. When you got a lot of guys to insert at each position, you got to, work them a lot. And that's what I'm thinking right now. I you know, I just think that in a way the Patriots need to maybe go after a legitimate left guard as a starter. You know, it'd be awesome to have Logan back, and I don't even know if he's healthy down where he's at because he came out of the game the other day and kind of hurt.
Please don't say Richie Incognito.
No, no way. No way. No way. I wasn't impressed with him even before the thing happened last year.
Good.
But there's a lot of guys, I even said, you know, for the size that Stork is, you know, maybe insert him in there, not just at center, but left guard to, you know, to see.
Well, I would allow that they might have, the guy in mind already in place, whether or not it's Klein or whether or not, they develop versatility of a guy like Cameron Fleming, who I think may be a diamond in the rough, so to speak. I mean, I think they've got some guys that can play. I would be stunned, however, if next offseason they did not take a good hard look at a couple more linemen in the draft. I think you're right. They probably need to do that. I don't think there's anybody out there right now that they can bring in. Now, the trading deadline comes up at the end of next month. It's about a month away. I think it's October 28th. Maybe they take a look around the league and see if there's somebody out there that they'd be willing to part with, you know, say a mid-round draft pick of some kind. Maybe they'll kick the tires on that for depth purposes. But you know what? I think the Patriots will probably ride with what they have. That's just my impression.
Yeah, and I would just as soon put Klein there at left guard and have Cannon, if Wendell was so hurt, Cannon at left or right guard and maybe Connolly a little bit at center if Stork wasn't there. So
yeah,
I just think maybe a six-man offensive front with Fleming to the left of Solder could set the tone. And again, the Patriots need to set the tone on defense and be a more aggressive team because right out of the gate after the Vikings scored that first touchdown, they were setting a new tone.
I mean,
they were really going after the quarterback, putting some pressure.
Correct.
And that's what they need to do. Last week they didn't do it, and the first week they didn't do it. There's a halfway point between, well, do I draw penalties on defense for something that happens, but you can't, you know, it's a live action game. You have to step it up and be aggressive and like I said, maybe a five-man front to start off a game to put the pass rush on, set the tone, and then back off and rotate guys. So,
it's not a bad thought, Andy. What's your score? What's your score?
Maybe 24-20 Patriots.
You're going to take the Pats by four.
Yeah.
Okay. Just a slight cover. Yeah, they will need to step it up, Andy. Thank you very much. Let's squeeze in other Dave in Connecticut. Hey, Dave, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good.
A very good point from Mike. That was a very good conversation between you and Mike.
Thank you.
I think this Patriots team definitely reflects more than, you know, than people think. Like, when we got Revis, people wanted to go like 2003, 2004 Patriots, but definitely reflects more of 2001. And I definitely like the idea of Brady being like a glorified game manager just to preserve him over time. So I'm going to go with that. I mean, Mike's point about the Patriots being able to absorb injuries and then the talented defense, all very relative points, and we've seen it for, with the injuries over years, the next guy in line, and then, you know, this team is definitely favoring the defense. So that's good. My prediction is 27-16 Patriots.
Ooh, by 11, okay.
Yeah, and I think that's based on just slight improvement in all areas. Hardly no penalties for the Patriots. Better offensive line play, but they are going to give up like two sacks, I believe. And I think that the defense is going to get a turnover or two. That's going to put the difference. And then that's why I picked the 11 points. I think the defense is definitely going to show you why you can definitely believe in this team. I don't really use social media, but I want to give you a Wednesday name if that counts.
Okay.
Line in the Sand Wednesday.
Line in the Sand Wednesday. Okay. I understand the meaning. Absolutely.
Okay. So there's my score. That's my thing. And one thing, though, just so I don't sound like a complete homer, even though I am.
At least you admit it.
Okay, I absolutely admit it. That's fine. I can be Fred Kirsch when Fred isn't Fred.
There you go. I like that, Dave.
Okay, devil's advocate, though, if the team doesn't do well, the only thing I want for the Patriots to do is for Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady to have a long conversation on Tom Brady long term. Because all the New England Patriots fans in the world deserve to we deserve what the Yankees are having right now with Jeter. I think we deserve that. And as long as we know when he's going to retire, we can have that. We don't think about trading him and having that dark mark in his career where he goes to a bad team, gets beat up and retires, comes back into a statue outside the stadium of Brady. You know, just let us know what he wants to do long term. And I think they should have that conversation if they haven't had it already.
Interesting. I'll wager that they have not had that, and I will wager that that hasn't even entered into their thought process. But, you know, depending on how this year unfolds, that might be a part of the any conversation in the future. It's possible. Good points, Dave.
Yeah, other than that, just great show. Love to hear it. You, Kevin, just keep up the good work, and
thanks.
I'm out, and I'll call back after a win.
You got it. Thank you, Dave. Dave in Connecticut. All right, we're into hour number two. We got to take a quick timeout. Hang on the phones if you're there. We will get to you. We'll also get to our emails and some of our tweets and Facebook posts. Prediction Thursday here on the show. Come up with a score. You get the right score on Sunday or Monday night, rather in this case, then you win the Media Guide yearbook next week. We have not yet given one out. So now's your time. Put on the thinking cap. Let me know what you think. I'll give you my prediction coming up in the next hour. But after the timeout, the guru himself, Russell Baxter, in the playbook.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons, so I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the whole entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Good afternoon. My name is Russell, and I am a wilderness explorer in Tribe 54, Sweat Lodge 12. Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
It's time to go around the NFL with football guru Russell Baxter on Patriots Playbook.
Yeah. Hour number two inside the playbook. ProFootballGuru.com. The guru. Let's just call him, because that's what he is. He's just the guru. Russell Baxter joins us as he does each and every Thursday here inside Patriots Playbook. How are you today, Russell?
I'm doing terrific. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. Our good friend Mike Tirico joined us in the opening hour of the program today, and as usual, he's pretty thorough, and he's got the game film up on the big screen at home, and he's trying to dig into these New England Patriots who, I guess, need a little digging into right now, don't they?
Yeah, a little perplexing effort last week. But if you go back and think about it, I don't know about you. I think the Patriots still have an offensive line that still has some question marks. And when you line up against the Raiders these days, now, I mean, listen, the Raiders are 0-3 and look like they're in for another long season and so on. And who knows what's going to happen in the next 13, 14 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing they do have is veteran defensive linemen who know the tricks of the trade, the Justin Tucks, the Antonio Smiths, the Lamar Woodleys. Interesting stuff. But as many people pointed out, what a odd game in terms of scoring last week. Every game by Anowski?
Isn't that great? Kowski. Everybody was K-O-W-S-K-I in their surname.
Yeah, I mean, somebody brought it up. I can't remember who I first heard it from. I heard it a couple of times, and it was just, I just find that's hysterical.
I got to give credit where credit's due. I first saw it on an SB Nation post somewhere.
Right. Well, here's the one thing that, you know, with all that and so on, that Patriots team that gave up 23 points in the second half against Miami,
yeah,
has now given up 16 points in two games and no touchdowns in the last seven quarters.
Yeah, they've stiffened things up quite a bit, albeit potentially against, shall we say, bottom third NFL offenses, but nevertheless, you got to start somewhere.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, defense still rules in this league. I know we get very carried away with the quarterback play and so on, and rightfully so. But you know, I like to remind people, you know, we throw out the term game manager like it's a four-letter word, and every quarterback's a game manager. They just manage different game plans.
You miserable bleeping game manager, you.
You know, I know, and people think if you don't throw the ball a lot, you're a game manager. Is that what a game manager? I mean, it's funny. But, you know, we form these, like, little almost imaginary stats. Well, he's a game manager. He's not a game manager. Peyton Manning threw 55 touchdown passes. He can't be a game manager.
No.
He's got to be a prolific passer.
Right.
I mean, there's all these different guys. I don't see any of these newfangled categories in the record and fact book. It still says, you know, passing, as far as I'm concerned, and factually. But it's been an interesting start to the season, and I hate to sound like a broken record. But the 3 weeks in, and we still keep on seeing these teams blowing leads and comebacks. The Dallas Cowboys coming back from 21. The Seattle Seahawks, there's another example of a team who blew a lead and still won the game. But who would have thought the Seahawks would have let a two-touchdown lead disappear at home the way they did?
Yeah, I thought that was really one of the most stunning things about last week. I was surprised to see that. Now, you know, they managed to, you know, to do what they did, but I didn't ever think that would happen on that home field, which I think should give Patriots fans at least a little bit of, I don't want to say confidence, but a little bit of hope if things start to go south in a hurry in Kansas City, because to me, Kansas City and Seattle may be the two toughest places for visiting teams to go into in the NFL.
Yeah, it is. Although it should be noted that Kansas City has lost its last four home games.
God, and, you know what? I don't think I even realized that. That's amazing.
Oh, I mean, that's what happens when you go 2-5 down the stretch, lose a playoff game after holding a 28-point lead, and get off to an 0-2 start. Remember, their only home game this year is they got whacked by Tennessee 26-10. But you go back late in the year last year, you know, losses to Denver, losses to the Colts, lost to the Chargers. Remember, that was a 9-0 team last year that just won last week and is now only 3-8 in its last 11 games, including the playoff game. So that team is hit upon very, very hard times, and I'm not sure what to make of them. I was stunned at the way they put away Miami last week. Absolutely stunned. And that might have said more about Miami than Kansas City. But I don't know what to make of the Chiefs right now. I couldn't tell if that was bad Miami or good Kansas City last week.
All right, we'll touch more on the Chiefs coming up in a minute. Let's get started with week four in the NFL with tonight's game. I really kind of find this a little bit of an enigma, but you've got a 1-2 Giants team playing at a 1-2 Washington team, and Eli Manning through the first three games is tied with five of the quarterbacks for most picks this season. He's got four. And yet, he's had great success against the Redskins in particular overall in his career. So, which Eli shows up tonight?
Well, for the first time last week, he didn't throw a pick. Well, actually, for the first time last week, he didn't throw two picks.
Yep.
You know, Larry Donald had the only turnover of the game, and they got 176 yards rushing, I think, from Rashad Jennings.
Mm-hmm.
And did what, you know, we haven't seen the Giants run the ball with any effectiveness in more than a year. They weren't a very good running team last season. And, you know, that's what it takes. I mean, you know, it wasn't all Eli when they won those Super Bowls in 2007 and 2011. It was the defense. It was a balanced attack, and it was some timely and, in some cases, amazing plays in those games. This will be interesting. You know, the Redskins, you know, Kirk Cousins took over last week with RG, or 2 weeks ago when RG3 got hurt. The Redskins have put 75 points on the board the last two games.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go back to opening week where RG3 didn't play that bad, but they still struggled. They scored an early touchdown, missed the extra point, and that was the end of that. So this is a very intriguing game. Now, the number that sticks out to me when it comes to the Redskins, win or lose, is, and including last week's loss to the Eagles, they haven't won a game in the division since 2012. They've lost seven in a row. I don't think they'll make it eight, but I think this will be another high-scoring game. I think I like the Redskins less, and it'll be interesting to see how Jennings performs this night. Mm-hmm. With all the carries he had last week off a short week.
Yeah, I kind of like the Skins at home in this one, too. So are you, I take it then you're kind of on the Kirk Cousins bandwagon, like a lot of people seem to be, favoring him over RG3 and his abilities?
Well, I think, you know, other than last week and still, you know, I know they gave up 37 points. One of those was on a kickoff return, one of the touchdowns. You know, the Redskins' defense has not been that bad this year. You know, fourth in the league, I think, in total yards allowed. You know, I know they gave up 37 points last week. The first two games against Jacksonville and Houston, they gave up a combined 27.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole key to me. Their defense has not played good football in about 4 or 5 years. And since Jim Haslett got there, they've really kind of been a disappointing unit. But they run the. But I'll tell you, Alfred Morris is as steady as they come. You know, they continue to be among the league leaders in rushing as a team. And I think Alfred Morris could wind up being the big difference tonight. Not so much Kirk Cousins. I think they're going to test the Giants' defense, which it seems unlikely that John Beeson will be around tonight.
Yeah. Let's also look then at the divisional games, the Patriots divisional games. The Buffalo Bills, who are 2-1 with New England, and now tied for the top spot in the AFC East, didn't take long, did it? On the road at the Houston Texans, surprised that Houston fell the way that they did last week after their hot start?
Yeah, it was the way they fell that they wound up giving up all those yards on the ground. Now, granted, Ryan Fitzpatrick threw three interceptions and did fumble once. He didn't lose the fumble, but it was still a bad play, obviously. But that was a little bit of a play. I know Arian Foster didn't play last week, and he's a different kind of back. I know Houston had a respectable amount of rushing yards, but it's not the same. I mean, Arian Foster wears you out in a lot of different ways. It's the reason he had 55 carries combined in the first two games.
Right.
But this is interesting because these are two last place teams from a year ago. And barring a tie, one of them is going to be 3-1. And, Houston at home. But I don't know about Houston at home. I know the Buffalo Bills are very familiar with Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's one of the, I don't know, Ryan's played for all 32 teams yet, or he's certainly zeroing in on that.
Well, you think you'll have any incentive to go up against Buffalo?
I hope for their sake they do, and hopefully he'll have some incentive to go against Tennessee this year, too.
Yeah, that's true.
And he played for last year. I think the Bills are a little more on steadier ground right now than the Texans. I think Buffalo's defense is the difference. They gave up a lot of carries to San Diego last week in terms of running the ball, but they didn't give up a lot of yards. And, you know, if Buffalo plays run defense this year with the way they can rush the passer, they could be really, really dangerous. I kind of lean Bills in this instance.
Wow. All right. A little bit of a surprise there. Jets are at home. They have the Detroit Lions. And I think the interesting thing that I've seen looking at this game this week is the Lions have held all of their opponents under 315 yards in three games. They have the best statistical defense in the NFL going into this game against Detroit, and they haven't even had anybody in the top 10 defensively in over 20 years. It's been a long time since Detroit has been dominant defensively.
Well, it's funny. If you told somebody that stat, you know what they would say with you, don't you?
What would they say, Russell?
They would say you were lying.
Barunch. Kevin's not at the controls.
Kevin, what's wrong with you? Come on.
There we go.
I'll give you a very interesting stat when it comes to these two teams. You just mentioned the Lions are first in total defense. They're also second against the run. And it's 6 degrees of separation. The New York Jets are second in total defense.
That's correct.
And they're first, they're on.
And the Patriots are just behind both of them.
What are the odds of that? Both these teams have a decent stable of running backs, although I think the Jets are a little deeper. But between Reggie Bush and Joyt Bell, they can get the job done as far as running the football. You obviously have the big playability of Reggie Bush. I think the Jets didn't exercise a lot of patience with the running game on Monday night. I know they made some mistakes. Geno Smith had some killer interceptions. The muff punt cost them dearly as well. But I thought they would run a little more. And I don't know how much running is going to take place in this game. I know the Jets have probably nobody on their roster that can cover Calvin Johnson. But these are the Lions on the road. And I hate to bring up past history, but this is a team that's just different away from home. Now, you know, what's interesting here is, we actually have a coaching rematch of the 2009 AFC title game, Jim Caldwell versus Rex Ryan.
That's right. I actually had not thought of that until you just said it. That's right. You forget that Jim Caldwell is the head coach of Detroit, even.
Yes. Well, I know because he's very, very quiet.
Yes, he is.
He's very, very quiet,
yep.
And I think the Lions will be a little quiet. I like the Jets in this game. More be based on the road low, and I know the Jets are coming off a short week, but I think their running game is a little more potent than Detroit's. And listen, I think Calvin Johnson and Matthew Stafford will have their game. But that Jets front seven, when they're in the right mood, can do a lot of different things.
They'll need to do a lot of different things if they're going to keep Stafford and Megatron from dancing all over them. I think that
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely no question about it. This is an this is a very, very intriguing game. And it's a game, obviously, the Jets need a little more than the line. And then, by the way, Jets are playing a NFC North team for the third straight week.
Right.
And obviously haven't fared too well. You know, it's been a rough stretch for the Jets since they looked like one of the most improved teams after they were leading the Packers 21-3.
Yeah, that's very true. And it all went downhill, just like it's gone downhill for the Miami Dolphins rather quickly after the opening win against the Patriots. And, of course, the Dolphins are the road team, even though they're both road teams, against Oakland playing in London this week. And I know you know this. This is the ninth regular season game played in London by the NFL. But no team that has lost in London has finished the season with a winning record.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. Do you remember the first London game in 2007?
Vaguely.
Okay. You want to talk about opposite ends of the spectrum?
Yeah.
It was Miami and the Giants.
Giants,
Miami,
right? Okay.
Finished 1-15. The Giants won the Super Bowl.
Right. Son of a gun. How about that?
I mean, how about
that's pretty opposite.
The way the Dolphins and the Raiders are playing right now,
mm-hmm.
My sources tell me that despite protests, both teams will be allowed to return to the country. after this game. So
listen, I give the Raiders more than a passing chance against the Dolphins the way the two teams have trended over the last 2 weeks.
I totally agree with you. I more than agree with you, as a matter of fact. I think the Raiders, the Dolphins to me look a little perplexing. And they've played basically one good half of football this year.
Yeah.
They didn't play well against the Patriots in the first half.
But they played one of the best halves. Yeah.
Buffalo to one offensive touchdown, but he still gave up 29 points. I don't know what to make of that effort last week against at home against Kansas City, a team that was struggling, and Miami made them look like a playoff team. By the way, how's this for a transition? As you well know, one of the most famous playoff games in NFL history took place between these teams in 1974.
Right.
So 40 years later, we go from the sea of hands to overseas.
Oh, I see what you did there.
I do too, and I'm still wondering why I did it.
Oh, not bad.
That play enough for people who do not remember what we're talking about. And sometimes the word great playoff game is an overstatement.
Mm-hmm.
In this instance, it's probably an understatement. The Dolphins were looking to go to their fourth straight Super Bowl and try to win their third in a row, and went into Oakland and in a great back and forth game. I mean, Don Shula and John Madden were the coaches, and late in the game, Kenny Stabler rolls out as he's falling down and hit by, I think it was Verndon Herter, who was pressuring him. He throws a ball to Clarence Davis, a running back, between basically four defenders.
Right, right.
He somehow hangs onto the ball, and it's referred to as the sea of hands play.
Right.
And it's an amazing. It's one of those great Raider plays like the ghost to the post and some of the other crazy things that they always seem to be in the middle of. And, of course, that's 40 years ago now.
Yeah.
1974.
Gosh.
And it put it basically an end to the Dolphins dynasty. And then you'll remember afterwards someone said, the two best teams in the league played in this game. The Pittsburgh Steelers, I think, took offense to that.
Yeah, they kind of did. That's very true.
And they went into Oakland and beat the Raiders, and, of course, then the new dynasty started when they won their four Super Bowls in 6 years.
Correct. Interesting. Nice little parallel. Good history perspective there, Professor.
Hi, my name is Russell.
That's right. Welcome to my class, NFL 101. Of the undefeateds, it almost seems unfair that Cincinnati's off this week and is lying in wait, and they get to prepare a couple of weeks for the Patriots because they know what's coming. The other one gets to go on the road in the Philadelphia Eagles at 3-0, and they take on a 49er team that I don't know if they're the San Francisco 49ers or the WTF 49ers. I'm not so sure anybody can really figure these guys out. But the Eagles have scored the most points in the NFL in the fourth quarter, 40 points in three games. The 49ers are the only team in the NFL that have not scored in the fourth quarter. Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, in a lot of different ways. The 49ers are a team that doesn't look like they're a very happy group right now. And it's funny, they got off to a 1-2 start last year. I think we forgot that. Remember, they beat Green Bay in the opener, held on, and then they got pushed around by Seattle on a Sunday night, and then people forget the Week 3 game at home, in which the Indianapolis Colts went into San Francisco and rolled them 27-7.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they rebounded, went up in the NFC title game anyway. But my contention with the Niners is, from day one this season, is can they hold on, and by the time they get around to play in Seattle late in the year, are they still going to be a factor in the playoff race? They may or may not, but the Arizona Cardinals are providing a red monkey wrench in the works of this.
They are. They have looked extremely strong. Extremely strong. More so than I think anybody really relatively expected. I mean, to those of us here in the East, the Cardinals are a bit of an enigma because you just don't follow them that much. But if you really watch that team play, that's a pretty fun team to watch.
Well, yeah, and I think Bruce Arians has a big part in that. And I think people will realize, going back to last year, they're 10-2 in their last 12 games after starting season 3-4. And now they're showing that they're doing it with a little bit of depth, because for people, remember, Carson Palmer was hot the last 9 games of last season. But so far, it's been Palmer and Stanton. And I think the most surprising aspect, John, has actually been a defense that I thought was going to have some issues. Carlos Dansby signed with the Browns. Darrell Washington suspended for the year. Darnell Dockett tore his ACL. That's the number one run defense, and they're losing all the guys in the middle of the field.
Yeah.
So what have they gone out and done this year? They're fourth against the run.
Yeah.
So really surprising. And credit to their, I want to give a lot of credit to their coaching staff. I thought the Cardinals would be a team that had to rely on their offense this year more than their defense. And you have to like what they've done on offense this offseason, bringing in Ted Ginn, bringing in John Carlson, the tight end. And how about John Brown, the rookie from Pittsburgh State,
mm-hmm.
The third round pick, who opened a lot of eyes during the summer, and he has not disappointed to date.
That's Pittsburgh State in Kansas, to those that don't know.
Yes.
Right. The other interesting thing here that I find,
my favorite band of the 1970s.
Yes, correct. The other interesting little tidbit that I got from our folks at the NFL this week, Nick Foles going in is the only player in the league that has 300-yard plus passing games in all 3 games so far this season, which I think speaks to a little bit of the emphasis on defense. I did not know this, but only 4 quarterbacks in the history of the league have started a season with 4 300-yard games. I'll wager that you can name them all.
I'll wager that I might not.
Okay. Take a stab at
that's
it, then.
That's one of those stats that you have to think about. And got to think about who got off to a hot start. I don't know if is Peyton in there?
Yes, he is. He did it twice, by the way, including Russell last year.
He got off to a great start last year.
He did. He did.
By any chance, Marino in 84?
No.
How about Fouts in 82?
Nope.
Okay, see, I told you I wasn't necessarily.
But you're aiming, you're going more toward that era. Steve Young did it in 98?
98, which they were, well, that's the year they got to the division. That's the year with the Owens game.
Yes, yes.
And then they lost to Atlanta the week after.
Kurt Warner did it in 2000.
Right, which was the year after the Super Bowl.
Correct. And believe it or not, Drew Brees did it last year.
Oh, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I think we forget. Drew Brees is over 5,000 yards 3 years in a row.
Yeah, we kind of forget about Drew Brees.
Yeah.
And I say that only because Brees and his Saints will play the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday night. Brees is 1-7 in his last 8 road games. But in his last 8 home games, he's undefeated with 15 more touchdown passes and 7 fewer picks. And you've got the Saints at the Cowboys. Now, why do I think the Cowboys will figure out a way to screw this up?
Well, because of the way Drew Brees and the Saints have played against them the last 3 times they played them. Beat them on Thanksgiving, I think in 2010. Beat them in 2012, 34-31, both of those games in Dallas, by the way. And let's not forget a Sunday night last year at the Superdome when the Saints put 40 on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Don, not 40 points,
40 first downs.
Woo.
An NFL record.
Which was amazing. I remember that. Yeah, I absolutely
9-17. Do. 9-17.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Drew Brees, Sean Payton, I don't know if Sean took a couple of secret papers with him on the way back in New Orleans when he was with the Cowboys, which is actually a while ago now. But they've really kind of had their number. And Drew Brees has lit up the Dallas defense, especially the last 2 years. I mean, last three times they played Dallas, the Saints have scored a combined 113 points.
Ooh. Yeah, that certainly, I think, sticks right in the mind of Cowboy fans everywhere on that one. They've been run over.
Here's what's interesting about that stat you threw out there.
Mm-hmm.
Usually with the Saints, when they go on the road, they struggle on offense, which is why they lose. Then they come home and they blow people out and score a ton of points at home and usually win big. It's just kind of interesting that this year they played two road games and scored 34 and 24 points and lost. And then come home last week and win and score 20 points.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of that.
I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. There really isn't a rhyme or reason.
Right, and I don't know what to make of their defense last week, because let's not forget Castle got hurt, and then Teddy Bridgewater came in, and it's different when a rookie gets thrown in there opposed to starting the game, which he'll do this week.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a lot of quarterback changes this week, it looks like. Obviously, with two rookies that'll get the start, Blake Bortles and Teddy Bridgewater.
True. All right, let me deal with one more here before we get back to the Patriots and Chiefs. It's a traditional game. It's a long-standing NFL rivalry. The Packers playing at the Bears Sunday afternoon. Obviously, the Patriots will play both teams before all is said and done this year. But this is something, again, through the good friends at NFL.com, sending this research out this week that you probably came across. But Green Bay's 1-2 going into the game. Chicago's 2-1. This is the third straight year that Green Bay started 1-2, and they won the division both of the previous 2 years that they started 1-2. However, no team, and this is the one that blows me away here, no team in NFL history has been under 500 three straight seasons, which Green Bay is, after three games, and made the playoffs in all three seasons. Doesn't bode well for the Packers, whether they win or lose this week.
No, it doesn't, and it's fascinating, because the one thing that sticks out in my mind about the Packers, and like you said, they're 1-2. They won the Super Bowl as a wild card when they were 10-6 in 2010. Remember, they played it in Chicago twice that year and beat the Bears in the NFC title game at Soldier Field. I bring that up because in the Packers' last six trips to Soldier Field, they're 5-1, including four straight. And the thing that I can't get out of my mind, despite watching them struggle last week and struggle early on this year, is the fact that in 2011, they won 15 games and won the North.
Mm-hmm.
2012, they only won 11 games and won the North. In 2013, they only won 8 games and won the North.
Won the North, yep.
Doesn't seem like anybody wants to seize the moment. And I'm waiting for somebody to sweep this team. But there's a reason they've been in the playoffs five straight years. Only the Patriots and the Packers own the longest current playoff streaks at 5 years in a row. But there's something, listen, Aaron Rodgers actually has okay numbers in his career against the Bears. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But since Jay Cutler was traded to Chicago, which was 2009, and since Dom Capers also happened to arrive in Chicago, I'm sorry, in Green Bay in 2009,
right,
this has been an absolute nightmare matchup for Jay Cutler. 1-8 as a starter, 10 touchdown passes, 18 interceptions, two picks, at least, in 5 of the 9 games.
Wow. Does that have anything to do with the fact why Green Bay is actually a slight road favorite?
Well, I think their success at Soldier Field is definitely a big part of it. I don't think there's any question about it.
And because the Bears are coming off of an emotional road win at San Francisco.
Well, no, they played the Jets Monday night.
I'm sorry, Jets, excuse me.
Well, still emotional.
Yeah, still emotional. You're right. Thank you, Jets. Got the games mixed up.
But here's the game within the game, okay? Aaron Rodgers versus the Bears. Jay Cutler versus Dom Capers. This is one of my favorite ones. And
right.
I think for a while Aaron Rodgers thought he was going to get away from this guy, but he won't. And I know he's not off to a great start this year. When Jared Allen was with the Vikings, he had a field day chasing down Aaron Rodgers.
12 meetings, 16 and a half sacks of Aaron Rodgers, including two safeties.
Ooh, 16 and a half with two safeties.
16 and a half just by Jared Allen.
Wow. He's been busy.
Jared Allen in 12 games versus Aaron Rodgers has 16 and a half sacks.
He likes that number 12, I guess.
If he played Aaron Rodgers every year, we'd have him in Canton after three seasons.
Wow.
He played him every game.
That's pretty good.
Guess what? You know what? We remember in a different way the Warren Sapp-Brett Favre dynamic
right.
went on,
right?
Which is more happy-go-lucky than anything else. Mm-hmm. I don't think Aaron Rodgers has felt lucky facing Jared Allen. I will say this, though. The Packers won the vast majority of those games. So either Jared Allen got Aaron Rodgers, but more times than not, Aaron Rodgers got the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay. Patriots, Chiefs, Monday Night Football. We've been talking all week long about the problems on the Patriots offensive line, how Tom Brady might be slipping a bit. Some would beg to disagree. Some don't want to see what might be there. Let me throw this one out at you. This is probably a number, again, that's come across your plate, I'm sure. Tom Brady, 1 for 17 of passes that are 20-plus yards in the air. That's the worst percentage in the NFL among quarterbacks with at least 10 pass attempts of 20 yards or more. Should we worry?
I don't know if it's time to worry yet. I mean, everybody was worried after week one, and they were so upset they blew the Vikings out in Minnesota 30-7. So,
yeah.
Listen, this team rarely plays two bad games in a row. The bottom line was they didn't play a great game last week and still won. And I don't care who the opponent is. I mean, that to me, nobody plays 16 great games in a season. It just doesn't happen. So I just have to see. I guess what I'm waiting to see, let me see the Patriots be 1-5 or 1-6. Okay? I mean that sincerely. You know, you want to talk about giving a team the benefit of the doubt based on track record. I mean, I don't know what more you want. I mean, 13 straight winning seasons? Okay? Was it 11 seasons in a row with 10 or more wins?
Mm-hmm.
It's sometimes we look really hard to find the cracks in the Patriots. Okay? And I'm not saying that because I'm on your show. It happens with every great team. We start to look to find the cracks in the Niners in the late 90s, and eventually they had one when Steve Young went out for a concussion and they suffered for a little bit. We've been constantly finding cracks with the Cowboys.
True.
You know? And I think it's a sense of respect, and it just shows you how long they've been good for. So until I see them go into a major slump, and by the way, when was the last time they lost three games in a row? I mean, let me know, please. Send it to me, okay? It's been a long time.
Yes, it has.
So, but again, the NFL, and just like college football, we anoint and discard teams on a weekly basis. So, I have to say, first off, I got to see the team in the AFC East that's going to catch them and challenge them consistently. And B, you know, they won the game. More than anything else. I mean, we vilified Dallas before the season even started. They're 2-1. You know? They're 2-1. They went into Tennessee and won and came back from 21 down. And their defense doesn't look nearly as bad as everybody thought it was going to be, including myself.
Right.
So, you got to let these things play out. I heard how bad the Patriots were last year. They had a lousy off year at 12-4 and being in the AFC title game. So, and listen, they're going on the road. That's a great crowd there. This Chiefs team, it's Andy, you talk about rematches, coaching rematch from Super Bowl 39, Andy Reid and Bill Belichick.
It is, so, yep.
Andy Reid will have his team ready. I don't know how talented his team is. I think that's the biggest problem with them. They showed they were capable last week. And Jamal Charles in the lineup makes every difference in the world. But I think this is going to be one of these ugly games that New England either finds a way to win or Kansas City finds a way to lose.
Okay. So, in other words, it's going to break down to mistakes made, and the Patriots right now are at the top of the league in forcing turnovers.
Well, and usually up around there, okay?
Yeah, they are.
You know, and also, you know, listen, I know Tom Brady's having a, you know, he isn't putting up the numbers that he's had in recent seasons. He hasn't thrown a pick yet this year.
No, he hasn't.
Okay? So, I mean, they've only turned over – John, go back the last few years, and I know turnover differential is an important stat, and I don't deny that, but you will find, if you go back and look, that the teams with the fewest turnovers actually find themselves in the playoffs more than even the teams with turnover differential.
So, in other words, it's their own mistakes, the fewer self-inflicted mistakes, rather than forcing other ones.
Remember a couple years ago, the Bears were plus 20.
Right.
44 takeaways. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they turned over the ball 24 times. Plus 20 can mean a lot of different. 20 plus 20 means can mean, you know, a perfect example. I'll give you a perfect example. Denver last year was kind of mediocre. They were 26 takeaways to 26 turnovers. Denver led the league in lost fumbles last season.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they were not on the minus side of the turnover differential. And then you get other teams that are minus. I mean, you have to look closely at the numbers. I mean, the Jets had 29 turnovers last year. That's not necessarily horrific. They had 15 takeaways, less than one a game. So you got to look at that number. But I go back and look the last couple of years, and it's the teams with the fewest turnovers that really seems to be more of a playoff indicator than either fewest most takeaways or best differential. And again, differential is not a bad thing. It's not like those teams aren't in the playoffs. But the fewer mistakes you can make has actually been a better gauge as of late.
Good number to keep looking at as everything progresses here. Russell, thanks for a generous portion of your time today. As always, it's greatly appreciated.
Oh, are you kidding us? There's nobody who enjoys portions more than I do.
Ba-dum-tsh. Once again, where? Kev, where is it? There we go. Kevin's doing about 16 things in the other, you know.
Oh, I know. I feel for him. Just remember, I'm a ranger, Kevin. I can help you. My name is Russell.
Russell, great to speak with you. Same time next week?
Absolutely.
You got it. Russell Baxter. I hit the button. I'm sorry, Russell. I apologize. I hit the button. That's my bad. I cut him off in mid-sentence. That's this, you know, shame on me. 16 lashes with a wet noodle for me. I didn't mean to cut Russell off in mid-sentence. He comes up with some of the best stuff at always. He always comes up with some of the best stuff. And every week that we talk to Russell, he always tells me something and tells us something and shares something with this audience. You kind of go, wow, where did that come from? But it's always pertinent. It's always germane to the discussion. And it usually is spot on with his analysis. All right. Let's spend the last little bit of time here, getting back into your predictions on Prediction Thursday and, some other notes that you have sent to us via Twitter and Facebook. Let me go back here with, oh, gosh, I got to go way back here. JD in Tennessee says, everybody needs to calm down, even if TB12 is declining. BB can figure out how to use him to win games. He went 11-5 with Matt Castle. He was terrible. Bill and Brady are both winners. Watch and see Monday night. I'm predicting that New England puts up 30 points and the defense continues to ascend. He says 30-12. Over Kansas City, 30-12, says JD in Tennessee. Let's see. Patel says Pats win this 24-17. Todd, I believe he called in a little bit earlier. Do I have his? Did he give me a score prediction? Yeah, he did. I think it was. He did. He said 27-16. I think it was. All right. Let's go with Glenn. Glenn in Ottawa, Ontario. He says, I agree with you 110%, John. Preach it, brother. I guess in terms of the negativity, I suppose, because this came earlier in the show. He says, heaven forbid we say anything negative about the team or Tom Brady. Let's all be realistic. Tom and this team's offense stinks right now. Until they fix it, they're not going anywhere. I, too, have seen Tom's play decline over the past couple of years. He can't hit the long throw. He's starting to miss the close throws. Something's wrong. It needs to be fixed. If it's the O-line not giving him enough time, fix it. If it's the receivers not running the proper routes or dropping balls, fix it. If it's Tom's declining, then fix it. Bring on the haters. Keep being realistic. Thank you, Glenn. Tom in Bedford says, how about Whimsical Wednesday? That's another good one. JM says, John, first, I enjoy the show. In fact, I wish you would call the radio games. I think you have a great play-by-play voice. Thank you, John. I appreciate that. You'll have to, you know, suffice with the Big East basketball games that I do during the wintertime. He says, however, trading away Brady absolutely does not improve this team. Try looking elsewhere for improvement. Even in decline, Brady is better than the bevy of underachieving QBs out there. All right, but maybe you got one in the future and a guy named Jimmy Garoppolo. You never know. But I see your point, John. Thank you. Michael says, John, I think you're completely right about Brady, but saying that, I still think he's one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. I know you do, too, and I do. But like you said, if we could get two first-rounders for him, why not? And people are just scared to be without Brady, but it's going to happen someday. It might as well have a couple of bullets in your gun and then just a knife, because the NFL is a gunfight. Rather than just a knife, because the NFL is a gunfight. Okay, I see the analogy. My prediction, Pats 21-7. He says, by the way, I think you're one of the realest bosses I'll ever listen to. Thank you, Michael. I think. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut. John, don't worry about the whiners. You have a great show. It's been great since the beginning. There's no one that is a bigger Pats fan than me. My wife will tell you bordering on obsessive compulsive disorder, but that's a story for another day. What's great about your show is the balance it provides by allowing all opinions to be voiced and discussed. So keep up the great job. Thank you, Howard. As for my prediction, I believe the OL will improve this week, do a better job both in the run and pass. I understand the focus is on the two great pass rushers that the Chiefs have, with their total of 9 sacks going against our less than stellar O-line to date, which has given up 7 sacks. I honestly believe that BB and staff will have made adjustments and schemed to protect TB12 this week, find a way to create the running lanes for Ridley and Vereen. From the defensive side, I'd like to note the Pats have 7 total sacks going against a Kansas City offensive line that has given up 11 sacks. I actually believe this is where the game is won. The Pats D stuffs the KC running game, gets to the KC quarterback early and often, creating turnovers. The D sets the tone. The O won't make mistakes. They don't do enough to lose the game. He says Pats 28, Chiefs 13. It's actually pretty well thought out, Howard. Thank you. Steve in Killeen, Texas, is John, name for the show, What You Gonna Do Wednesday? What you gonna do, brother? Isn't that a Hulk Hogan reference? I think it is, isn't it? He says, the what you gonna do being the question that can allow the flexibility to go in whatever direction you need. Okay. And he says, now about the Chiefs. Ooh, I see this as a street fight in a back alley. Pats pull it out 29-24. D finds a way to bring more pressure, and Brady is able to cite more receivers. Steve, thank you. This one comes from Todd in Jacksonville. Wednesday's show theme is Whatever Wednesday, as in down for whatever on Wednesday. Games, guests, reflection, foresight, whatever. That's a pretty good one, Todd. And John is the president of Whateverville, wherever he is or wherever the show goes. Thank you, Todd. I'm the president of Whateverville, Kevin. We may have to come up with a drop for that one. Ross says, Patriots win 23-17. Thank you, Ross. Chad in the ATL. Hope you got my email for the name game. Yes, I did, Chad. Thank you. And it's a good one, actually. He says, if the Pats have buttoned up their O-line, even just a little, they have a chance to really make an impact in this game. If not, they're going to have a hard time on Monday night. So if the Pats somewhat alleviate their offensive line and they stay consistent in what they do best, taking away the opponent's best weapon, Jamal Charles, I say 34-14, Pats. Okay, that actually makes sense too, Chad. That's a well-thought-out prediction. Not sure I agree, but it's still well thought out, and it's sound reasoning. Sean in New Hampshire, Bill the GM permanently on the bad list, Bill the coach permanently on the good list, Bill the GM and coach permanently on the injured list. Interesting. Glenn also adds, he says, my prediction, 20-17, Patriots, 20-17. Okay, Joel from Connecticut. Pats 30, Chiefs 13. John, I have yet to be completely pleased with the team, but I will always have hope because I know the fire, the desire to be great is in this team. This year is the prove-it year for me, though. These Pats need to prove to me this year they're ready for greatness, and I'm not convinced of it yet. Josh in Orlando says, how about PAT Wednesday? As for make your point after. Okay. Another good choice. I'd like to hear a topic for Wednesday to be given to the listeners on Tuesday before you sign off for the day. Then we can dwell on it. That's also another good idea, Josh. We might try to work that in at some point this year. That's good. Topic for Tuesday to consider for Wednesday. Especially would be helpful, I would think, for those that listen to the Tuesday show on podcast. Anyway, Josh in O-Town says, Pats 21, Chiefs 13. Patrick says, winning or whining Wednesdays. Tony says, John, I tweeted you my name suggestion, forgot to leave a score prediction. He says, 24-23 Pats. Late game field goal for the win. And his suggestion, by the way, here, and he mentioned it here in the email, but his suggestion that he also tweeted to me was Town Hall Wednesdays. And I actually like that one, Tony, a lot, because it does sort of become kind of all-encompassing, and it has a great New England tie, because the practice of town hall meetings certainly originates in New England like that from back in the days of the Revolutionary War. So Town Hall Wednesday is definitely up at the top of the list. Thank you for that, Tony. That's a good one. Lisa in Rhode Island. How about Wake Up Wednesday? I'm a longtime listener to both your show and the PFW Boys, but I've never written in or called because I'm too shy. Lisa. No need to be shy. She says, I don't have a Twitter account, but I heard your contest for naming the Wednesday show. Just had to add my idea to your pile for consideration. It's a good one. I like Wake Up Wednesday because sometimes we do get in the midweek doldrums. And we need to sort of juice things up. Don't be shy. You just, hey, you broke the barrier here and you emailed into the show. That's great. It's good to know that we actually have fans that are listening locally. You know, we've got, I think I got a regular in Clay from Foster, Rhode Island. I got another couple of them from like Cumberland, Rhode Island that listen in. I got several from Massachusetts that I know listen in and contribute to the show. I'm glad you did. It's good to know that we do have the local, you know, contingent as well as those from around the country and around the world listening to the program. It's good to know. She says, Pats fans, including myself, sometimes need a gentle reminder one way or the other, depending on the team's performance in the games previous. It's easy to get lulled into complacency when things are going well, and often just as easy to become mired in the muck of negative thinking when things go poorly. We need to take some time to wake up and consider the possibilities, the realities, the big picture. We need to come down off the ledges or keep a little bit of our rein in on our enthusiasm. So Wake Up Wednesday is often about balance. About analyzing what to do with our nitpicks and how we get to our predictions, refreshed, ready to go. That's awesome. That's awesome, Lisa. That's good. Excellent. Todd in Jacksonville, one more from me. How about Will Call Wednesday? Also a good one. Okay, see, now I think we've put some thought process into this, Kev. When we asked for the second call for suggestions, I got some that I actually really like today. This is not going to be an easy decision. Harley in North Carolina had a good name yesterday, waited on hold, lost the signal. I finally got on the air anyway. I began listening today and heard you really wanted an alliteration, so you have Nitpick Tuesday. What if the next day you build on was discussed Tuesday as Ways to Win Wednesday? That's good. And Harley also says Pats win 40-10. Whoa! Blowing them out, huh, Harley? Rob writes from Ormond Beach, Florida. Rook, not listening to the best radio show of all time live, but I wish I was. Thank you, Rob. I do have a question before I give you the winning prediction. With Browner coming back next week, who's going to be let go to make room, if anyone? I doubt Timms makes the 53, but if he were, who would he replace? Well, I honestly believe in both instances, it's going to be a game plan situation for whatever they feel they need to do in terms of the game plan for Cincinnati for next week. We'll kind of jump into that next week, I think, a little bit more, Rob. I'm not putting off your question, but honestly, I haven't really given it any thought, and I need to get past Kansas City before we kind of devote some time to it. He says, as for my prediction, I see the Pats beating the Chiefs 19-12. He says, thanks to you and Kevin, the show makes the week fly by. You're a good dude. Thank you. 19-12 is also good right there, close to where I'm going. Gustavo says, John, sorry I haven't written in before. Been busy working. Well, that's no excuse, Gustavo. About the game Monday, Patriots win 27-24. And then Michael in San Diego. John, I'll make it simple. Pats prevail 35-13 through the use of both tight ends, Revis and Wilfork Island, covering a lot of real estate. Okay, Facebook. Herman, my score prediction, 24-21, Pats win. And he says my Wednesday show prediction or Wednesday show name is Next Game Wednesday. Mary Beth, 30-27 Pats and a nail biter. Tyler from Georgia. He also sends in, as always, I'm squeezing in my prediction last minute. Your points about KC's red zone percentage and the Arrowhead crowd gives me concern. However, I'm a big homer, so I'm going to pick my Pats 24-16. And as far as the show name, how about What in the Hell Wednesdays? Or are you talking about whatever the hell you want? Well, that's close to what I was thinking, to be honest with you. That's pretty close. I like that. WTH Wednesday. All right, couple of other Facebook posts, because I kind of neglected Facebook this week. Adam says, good afternoon, Mr. Rook. Hope all's well. I sure feel Yates' optimism about this team, even though there are some definite concerns with the offensive line. Brady and Julian's health and questionable offensive play calling. I believe the defense will get better. Hightower is playing much better, and Stork could be an upgrade. His prediction, Pats bounce back and win 20-17. Sean says, John, I think I'm going to go with a close win for the Patriots, 21-17. Both teams are kind of in the same boat with offensive problems, so I give the edge to the Patriots, since the defense seems to be playing well and getting takeaways. Onik on Facebook says, John, great show. As always, my prediction, Pats 30. He says KC 30, Pats 17. Wow. He's going for the home team. Hopefully the Pats show what the defense can do against a better team. Blake says, can't listen to the show live because of the time difference, but we'll listen to the podcast. All right, Blake, thank you. Hashtag prediction Thursday. Way to use it. Pats win 27-24. Scott, contrary to what some are saying, I like your honesty on the show. I also like the PFW boys, but they're a little wacky, specifically Andy with the extremely loud noise coming from his pie hole most of the time. Kevin is shaking his head up and down in agreement. Pats over the Chiefs, 31-20. Scott also says, WTF Wednesday, what's the focus Wednesday? That's outstanding. What's the focus Wednesday? But we would hashtag WTF Wednesday. Kev, I don't know, what do you think?
I like that one.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
What the bleep? But what the F is what the focus? What's the focus Wednesday? That's pretty good.
That way it kind of leaves it open for what we want it to be.
Whatever our focus needs to be for the day, right? That's pretty good. What the Hell Wednesday was also pretty good too, because you have a tendency, you got to be careful that you don't slip and say the real F word.
WTF here is edgy. I like that.
It is edgy. It is edgy. Ooh, that's really good. That's really good, Scott. Abby says, Blueprint Wednesday. I'd like to hear more about the game plan approach of how we're going to play our next game. Specifics. And then he also says, realism. I got some realism for you, Johnny. 28-24 Patriots. Prediction Thursday's here again, says Paul. Tough game. Patriots 30, Chiefs 16. Nori from Tempe, Arizona, back listening to the show this Tuesday. Well, where you been, Nori? Pats lose a close one. He says Chiefs 21, Patriots 17. Nori, that's kind of where I'm leaning. Before the season started, I picked this as a loss. If you go back and you look at the record, I had the Chiefs as a potential L. And while I think Kansas City isn't quite as good, potentially, as they have turned out to be, 1-2 in the start, I'm going to stay with my original prediction. I'm going to have this a much lower scoring game, however, and I think the Patriots' unfortunate offensive struggles continue this week. And, you know, I certainly like to be wrong. But I am saying, in this particular instance, I'm saying Kansas City 16, Patriots 13. That's my prediction. 16-13, Chiefs. So that means I got the Chiefs taking the 3.5. I guess that's the spread. Doesn't mean that, you know, I guess if I got to come down with the score, I am going to go 16-13 Chiefs. But really, if I was going to wager on this one, I'd say I'd take the Chiefs and the points. Doesn't really make any difference. It's tough anyway. Certainly the Patriots can win this football game. I really believe largely it's going to boil down to whether or not the Patriots can make the Chiefs predictable on offense. So that means they got to take away Jamal Charles and Nile Davis in particular. And I think that you'll see some eight in the box. I think you'll see them try to dare Alex Smith to go deep against the Patriots secondary that I'm sure is confident somewhat in man-to-man coverage, because Smith has not gone deep and didn't go deep more than 8 yards downfield on any pass attempt last week when they bludgeoned Miami. So I think that's where the Patriots will go. Conversely, on offense, I think the Patriots will try to go dink and dunk, and I think they'll try to negate, you know, the end pass rush from Kansas City and try to attack the middle of the Chiefs' defense and see if they can have some success there, which means I think they'll try to run the ball. And I think you'll find them in a lot of third down situations. It'll boil down to A, can the Patriots turn the Chiefs over? B, can the Patriots get the Chiefs off the field on third down, and can the Patriots convert their own third downs? That's where it's going to go. I'm just thinking, because of the crowd, I you know, and because you're working in a new, still fragile offensive line, I think we'll see some improvement, but it's just going to be tough to get there. Hope I'm wrong. All right. Thanks so much. We're over time. We got to get to the fantasy football guys here coming up, Bill and Anthony. So stick around for that here on Patriots.com radio. Thanks to all of our guests this week today, Mike Tirico from ESPN and ABC, and, of course, the one and only guru, Russell S. Baxter, for joining us here as he does every Thursday. Now, next week, because it's a Monday night football game, Patriots Monday will be on Tuesday. There won't be any Monday programming. It'll just be repeats leading into the game from this week's shows. Tuesday will be all the Patriots Monday stuff from WEEI here in Boston. So we won't be on the air with a program until Wednesday. We will fit Nitpick Tuesday into next Wednesday's shows and hopefully debut the new whatever hashtag that we have decided on for next Wednesday show as well, all on the same program. So you might want to hashtag it Must Listen Wednesday here in the playbook next week. Enjoy the games, everyone.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.